Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. For today, we are back with the next installment of our podcast series with UBS Asset Management, House Call, Talking Equity Markets with UBS Asset Management. For today, I am happy to be joined again by Jeremy Zirin, Senior Portfolio Manager of the Houseview Equity Portfolios and Head of the Private Client U.S. Equity Team. Today, we will spend some time diving into equity markets. So with that, Jeremy, thank you for spending some time today with our listeners, our clients of UBS. Welcome back.
Yep, thanks for having me on again. Happy New Year, Dan.
So, Jeremy, we do have a lot we want to cover with our listeners. Let's get right to it, beginning with the markets. Looking at the S&P 500's total return in 2024 was just over 25%, this marking its second consecutive year of 25% gains, which is a feat that hasn't happened since the 1990s. So, Jeremy, can you talk about what you see as the main drivers of the market gains of the past couple of years and how you're thinking about the outlook for 2025?
Yeah, thanks, Dan. Sure. Let me make a couple observations about the gains we've seen over the past couple of years. You know, the first one is really about the starting point for those gains, right? Stocks were clobbered in 2022 when inflation spiked and the war broke out in Ukraine and headline CPI inflation jumped to over 9%. You know, at that point, you may remember the Fed started aggressively raising interest rates and the market dropped significantly as investors started pricing in a higher likelihood of a recession. So part of the story of the gains in 23 and 24 is simply the fact that not only did the economy not go into a recession, but that, you know, in large part due to the huge fiscal stimulus that was still filtering its way through the system, you know, the U.S. economy was so resilient to higher rates that GDP actually expanded between 2.5% and 3% each of the past 2 years. So meaningful upside surprise relative to expectations in terms of economic growth. You know, the other driver of the market gains over the last couple of years has been the outsized gains that we've seen in mega cap growth companies. Most of those gains are in stocks levered to artificial intelligence or AI. And so if you look at the past 2 years, you know, the back-to-back 25% gains in the S&P, you know, has added up to a 57% two-year total return in the index. But then if you break those returns down by style, you know, the Russell 1000 Growth Index is up 90%, and the Russell 1000 Value Index is up, you know, just 27%. So really, the growth stocks have dominated and driven much of those market returns of the past couple of years. You know, another way I like to frame, you know, market gains or market returns over any period is by bifurcating them between the contribution from earnings and the contribution from changes in valuation. And what really stands out in both 2023 and 2024 is that valuation expansion was the bigger driver of the market gains than the rise in earnings. So in 2023, you know, the PE of the S&P 500 started the year at 16.5 times earnings and rose to 19.5 times earnings by year end. And then last year, the PE rose from 19.5 to 22 times earnings. So while earnings growth has been, you know, reasonably good the last couple of years, about 5 or 6% in 23 and then closer to 10% last year, you know, not close to the 25% gain in markets, the valuations have expanded. And so the reason I couch it in those terms is that when we're thinking about the outlook for 2025, you know, we have to think about what are the prospects for earnings and what are the prospects for changes in valuations. And from that standpoint, I'm still fairly optimistic on markets broadly, but I think that gains are going to be much more aligned this year with the gains that we see in S&P 500 earnings. And so we're penciling in, you know, roughly 10% earnings growth in our base case. And I think it's reasonable to expect that market gains will be, you know, plus or minus somewhat aligned with that 10% earnings growth figure.
So as we're speaking today, we are at this point just a couple of weeks into 2025. However, equity markets have stumbled a bit since early December. I'm curious, Jeremy, what do you attribute that to and what signposts do you think are needed to stem the recent slide?
First and foremost, we've seen a sharp rise in interest rates, The 10-year Treasury bond yield has increased by more than 100 basis points off its September 24 lows, and it nearly reached a cycle high of 5%. And so higher interest rates can hurt stocks in a couple of ways. First, rising borrowing costs can push out the recovery in some of the interest rate sensitive industries like housing, autos, and general industrial industries and end markets. And that could ultimately, lead to lower earnings. So that's one investor concern. The second, when it comes to investing, the largest and most liquid asset classes are stocks and bonds. So as bond yields rise and become more attractive, investors are more likely to allocate more to bonds relative to stocks, all things being equal. Of course, the real question here, Dan, is why long-term interest rates are rising, especially considering the Fed just started to cut in short-term interest rates, and has in fact, reduced the Fed funds rate by 100 basis points in September. And so I think there are three reasons why we've seen, the 10-year rise over the past few months. One is that, we've enjoyed and markets have enjoyed the steady disinflation over the past couple of years, and that has stalled out a little bit over the last couple of months. At the same time, growth indicators like non-farm payrolls have surprised to the upside. The second reason is that, President Trump's candidacy, or President-elect Trump's candidacy, I should say, was really predicated on a pro-growth, business-friendly agenda. And I think that has some investors worry that that could put upward pressure on rates. And then lastly, also related to D.C., I think there are growing concerns about the level and trajectory of the federal deficit, which has made bond investors nervous and has increased the risk premium, for bond investors. And so, what are the signposts for the equity market slide to stabilize? And, granted, the slide has really been more range-bound. We only saw about about a 4% peak-to-trough decline in equities. But what are the signposts we're looking for the bull market to resume? And just this morning, we saw one of those signposts, right? We saw the core CPI come in a bit lower than consensus, and bond yields are now down more than 10 basis points, sparking a nice rally in stocks. And aside from the inflation data, I could envision bond market yields falling if we hear more talk out of Washington about, limiting the scope for tariffs or perhaps discussions around extending tax cuts with specific deficit neutral pay fors. And if that were to occur, it would go a long way, I think, in improving both bond market and equity market sentiment.
Now, have to acknowledge how the market concentration in the top 10 names of the S&P 500 has nearly doubled over the past decade, this largely due to the tech sector. So, Jeremy, how should investors think about the current high level of market concentration?
Yeah, we talked a little bit about the key drivers of the market gains over the last 2 years. Some of the data on just how narrow the breadth has been, it's been pretty remarkable. Over the past 40 years, on average, the top 10 stocks by contribution account for roughly 35% of the S&P 500's annual gain. But in 2023 and 2024, that figure has been 69% and 62% respectively, or nearly double the historical average. Another measurement of market breadth is what percentage of companies actually beat the S&P 500 each year. All things being equal, you'd expect roughly 50% of the companies to outperform and 50% to underperform. Last year, only 28% of S&P 500 companies beat the index. And since 1985, there have only been 3 years when this number was under 30%, 1998, and then the last 2 years, 2023 and 2024. So what does this all mean, for investors? So the way I think about it is that investors typically buy index funds because they are more diversified than active managed funds. But today, indexes are actually more concentrated and they're carrying a lot more idiosyncratic or stock-specific risk, considering that the top 10 stocks in the S&P 500 make up close to 40% of the index. So it isn't necessarily a negative signal per se on future returns, but it does result in investors that are investing in funds that track the indices. Those funds are just simply less diversified than they've been in the past, and they're more dependent on the fundamentals of individual stocks.
Turning to Washington, D.C., following the 2024 election results, there has been significant focus on the Trump administration's plans, in particular tax cuts and tariffs. How do you assess the incoming administration's impact on the markets?
There are many aspects of Donald Trump's second presidential term that need to be examined carefully with regards to their impact on the markets. I mean, the four key policy initiatives that we're monitoring are tax policy and deregulation, which would be more market friendly, and then tariffs and immigration restrictions, which could have a negative effect on growth and potentially increase inflation. And what's going to be important is the prioritization, sequencing, and magnitude of policy changes in these areas. So let's start on the positive side. You know, Trump campaign proposal includes extending personal income taxes, lowering corporate tax rates, and deregulation. And those all in net should boost corporate profitability and economic growth. But the direct impact of lower taxes in this cycle or in this presidential term, let's call it Trump 2.0, I would say it's just not very high and not nearly as impactful as it was during his first term. Keep in mind that, you know, in, you know, the goals of regarding personal income tax rates are to extend the reduction that already took place in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017. So essentially, no real stimulus, but just maintaining lower tax rates. And then with regard to corporate tax rates, in his first term in office, Trump lowered corporate tax rates from 35% to 21%, and any further reduction would really pale in comparison to that 14 percentage point decrease that we saw, you know, 8 years ago. You know, also with the current large federal budget deficit, you know, fiscal hawks in Congress might resist policies that would be, you know, further expand, you know, the deficit. So that's, you know, the good news is that there are some pro-growth agenda, you know, initiatives. They may not be as large as they were the first time around. But I would say similarly, I don't think that, you know, the potential negative impacts of tariffs or slowing immigration are ultimately going to be as, you know, punitive as many fear. I think a lot of them are going to be more bark than bite. You know, threats of imposing tariffs on countries like China, Mexico, Canada, and some of the BRICS nations, you know, I think will likely lead to increased market volatility. But just given the potential legal and congressional challenges involved and knowing the potential negative impacts to growth and inflation, I think the base case is that the Trump administration will likely implement bilateral and more targeted, selective tariffs rather than broad-based ones that he campaigned on. I'd also note that the world is just in a better place today, meaning that it's better prepared for trade tensions or for tariffs to be implemented than they have in the past, and many companies that, you know, we've spoken to have already diversified their supply chains in order to reduce reliance on, you know, single countries like China and to mitigate the risk from tariffs. So maybe to summarize, I think the incoming administration is very likely to periodically inject volatility into markets, but I don't believe that changes to tax codes and tax rates, trade, regulatory or immigration policies are going to meaningfully change our core view that the current economic fundamentals in the U.S. are fairly healthy and that the expansion should continue at least over the course of 2025.
Well, Jeremy, thank you very much for spending some time today with our listeners, our clients, sharing with them your thinking when it comes to U.S. equity markets and positioning within. Do look forward to picking back up with our conversation next month.
Good talking to you again.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.